This is Basketball U.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Welcome in and happy feast week to you. This is Basketball U, Tyler Aki with you. We're on the speed 2 times a week talking all things college hoops. And today we're going to get an all things feast week breakdown with Kevin Sweeney from SI.com. You can check his work out there. Also find him on Twitter at @CBB_Central. And you can catch him with the Field of 68 as well, doing a lot of post-game shows and stuff on their Twitter account, Field of 68. Kevin, thanks so much for joining me today. So many great weeks on the college basketball calendar, whether it's Feast Week, whether it's the NCAA tournament. But where does this one, for you in particular, stack up for the best college basketball weeks of the year?
Yeah, it's got to be top three, right? Like conference tournament championship week, first weekend NCAA tournament, and this week. I think, obviously, you don't feel like the stakes are as high this week, which I think is the only thing that cuts it off. I mean, look, like you want to win the game, but like you're playing tomorrow either way. And that's obviously different in March, but I mean, it's special. It's a lot of fun. It is a little whiplash inducing as you try to figure out like what's what. Certain teams, like our friends over at Colorado, seem to still have no idea. But you know, here we are. So it's been a lot of fun. We're just getting started. I'm off to Portland for PK85 in a couple of days, which will be a huge event, kind of big tent post in the early non-conference. So really couldn't be any more fun than we've got the next couple weeks, the wall-to-wall basketball from pretty much morning till night.
So you mentioned you're headed off to Portland for the PK85. I've got your piece up from earlier this week previewing the entirety of Feast Week, and I love this line that you dropped in there. If I ever amass generational wealth like Phil Knight, I hope to one day have a large basketball tournament for my birthday party. That was all. I love that. So let's start with PK85 because that hasn't gotten underway yet. That's a couple days out from here. What a field. I mean, you've got the invitational side of the bracket and then you've got the legacy side. They're not going to really clash there, but you've got Carolina, you've got UNC or Villanova, you've got UConn, Bama, Duke, Gonzaga, West Virginia, Purdue, Xavier, all these just brand names in the sport all converging at once at the PK85 this year. What's the thing you're looking forward to most in this tournament?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest thing is just seeing Carolina tested because they haven't been so far. And I think they've had some bumps in the road, but I don't know how much of that is related to, okay, like we're better than this team, we're going to walk on the floor and beat them, and how much of it is we've got some real things to fix. And I think we'll learn something about Carolina. We've seen Gonzaga in a big game. We've seen Duke in a big game. But I'm really excited to see them, excited about, you know, some of these teams with first and early term coaches, right? Like Florida Xavier on the first day of the tournament on Thursday is going to be a really interesting game. Sean Miller and Todd Golden, two guys trying to get programs back to prominence. And this is a great weekend for them to try to make a statement, which will be really, really exciting. So I think number one is what does the number one team in the country look like? But from there, I mean, storylines galore.
Yeah, I look at Carolina, too, and there were some stumbles early on, albeit without losing. I was actually kind of worried for them in that James Madison game because that's the James Madison team that can shoot the lights out. And I was thinking, could this be like an early trap, maybe a look-ahead spot for Carolina where they know they're about to go into the teeth of things in this PK85, but they go out there, they handle business against James Madison. I know that Carolina right now is the number one team in the country, but for you, are they the number one team that you've seen so far in college basketball in the early stages of the season?
No, I mean, like I've had them as number one in the preseason. And I think at the end of the day, like the way I try to rank is where I think teams will be in March with like few caveats, right? Like obviously I can't rank Florida State 50th if they're 0-4, right? Like inevitably, like they're not good. They're not good, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think if the NCAA tournament was tomorrow, I think Houston is way better than North Carolina. But I think we know that the ceiling is there with Carolina. They've done it before. They're theoretically better than they were last season on paper. Seth Trimble's been very impressive. Pete Nance is a very good piece and will continue to help them as he gets more comfortable, right? Like this team has a chance to be really, really special. It's just a matter of, can they get to that level that they found last March? And so, I have no issue putting him first right now. But again, if the tournament was tomorrow, I like Houston. I like a couple more teams probably over the Tar Heels. But that's something we'll learn about this weekend at PK5, right? If they play better, we can start to feel a little bit more comfortable that, okay, like they kind of play with their food against College of Charleston. That's not the end of the world. But
right.
Again, if they play like they did against College of Charleston, they're going to get hammered by UConn. Is kind of the point. And that'll be the interesting thing to see here coming up this weekend.
Are we sort of going through a similar exercise with Houston that we've done in years past with Gonzaga, where, yeah, the schedule is not going to be as daunting as if they played in a true power conference, but they're still being tested night to night. And again, like they still have a couple of non-conference matchups that are certainly intriguing. Alabama, Virginia, they've got some of these games coming up that are still going to be difficult, but it's not the you're going into it night after night like you do in the Big Ten or the ACC or the Big 12. But are we kind of doing the same thing with Houston that we've seen over the course of Gonzaga? Because to me, Houston looks like one of the most impressive teams in the country early on. But is this one of those things where we don't see those same type of challenges when you get to January and February and it may haunt them in March?
Yeah, I think it is a little bit different just because I think athletically the AAC looks a lot more like a high major league than the WCC does, right? Like the WCC is a very well coached league, a very well scouted league. But at the end of the day, like most players in that league are mid-major players, right? You have 6'9" centers and like unathletic wings and just kind of the reality of it. And that's not in every case.
But, and hey, Houston's a victim of that too.
Right. Like the AAC, at least like UCF is recruiting high major players. Like Temple's recruiting high major players. Like those programs have not been good enough. And that's a huge issue for Houston. But like, I think like physically the test is not, it's not the same as like when Gonzaga walks into, okay, now we're in March. Now we have to play a different level of physicality, right? It's a different level of talent. Maybe it's a different level of coaching, but I think Houston will be a little bit more prepared physically. But I think at the end of the day, right, it's the same thing as Gonzaga. Like, if the league is your excuse, I think you're kind of missing the forest for the trees. Like Gonzaga hasn't won a championship for multiple reasons. I don't think playing in the WCC is one of them, right? If Houston doesn't win a championship this year, it won't be because of its league. Houston has two, maybe three first-round picks, and Marcus Sasser, the Jairus Walker kid, and then potentially Terrence Arsenault, who's really, really good. Like they have those type of pieces and experience and one of the best coaches in the country. Like that's a team that can go to a Final Four and win a national championship. Like, I don't care if they're playing in the WCC, the MEAC, the SWAC, the American Conference, or the Big Ten. Like, they'd be good anywhere. Will they win a championship? We'll see. It's not exactly an easy thing to do, but I think they're really, really good. I'm not necessarily concerned about the competition level being a problem.
All right, hear me out. I've been saying this for a little bit, but doesn't it kind of feel like the stars are aligning for Houston? I mean, Final Four is in Houston. It's Jim Nance, Houston alums, final four, final national championship game that he's going to be calling. Wouldn't it just make sense for Houston to win it all in their hometown with one of their most notable alums on the call?
It'd be special. And it does, I mean, it's funny.
He's
like
a piece of that net too, if Houston wins.
For sure. And it's funny because it kind of felt like last year there was just this constant, like, somehow we're going to get to Duke at the Final Four. Somehow Duke's going to get to the Final Four. Like, there's just no chance they won't. And there they were. So it wouldn't surprise me. And again, Houston's built to be there. I have no question that they have the ability to do that. I thought like their first big test of the year was against Oregon. I thought they played C+ Houston basketball. Oregon played very well. And Houston won and covered on the road. Like they're really freaking good.
Yeah. And it's like Kelvin Sampson to me. I mean, maybe it's because he's at Houston, but he doesn't get nearly enough credit at least to like maybe the average college basketball fan. I always point back to that Illinois game in the tournament last year. You saw a difference of two cultures there between what Kelvin Sampson and the high intensity that they played and sort of the lackadaisical nature on the other side from Illinois. It looked like two different programs in terms of how they were coached. And Kelvin Sampson, I thought, just put together a masterclass when he shut down that Illinois team last year in the tournament.
I'll tell you what, I was in Vegas last year for the quote-unquote Maui Invitational that was played there during COVID. And I sat behind the Houston bench for a game and like, I was just like unbelievably floored by like the level and the standard that he maintains. I'll never forget, like they were playing Butler in their first game and they're up 31-13 like 8 minutes in, just destroying Butler. Butler has no chance. Like, they're physically overmatched. They have no talent compared to Houston. Like, this game is going to, Houston could win this game by 50 if they want to win this
and
game.
And this is like full strength Houston too, before some of the injuries.
Sasser was there, the whole shebang. Yep. And they give up one offensive rebound, and Kelvin Sampson turns to his bench and screams at every single assistant coach, "We can't do anything right." And I'm just like, what are you talking about? They missed like two free throws in the second half, like with their bigs. It was like Juwan Roberts with the free throw line. He's like not a shooter. He missed like two free throws. And he turns to his bench like, "We have to be the worst free throw shooting team in America. Like, I can't." And I'm like, I don't know how like these guys are like taking this seriously, but it's just, I think it's just like an illustration of the standard that's set there. And I think he's done a great job of recruiting guys who like are willing to be coached at that level and are willing to like hold themselves to that standard. And like, aren't understanding, like if they don't play at his level, like toughness wise, execution wise, they're just not going to play. And like, that's the reality. And it's unbelievable what he's built. It's as impressive as anything, I think, outside of Gonzaga in terms of the consistency that they've had the last 5 years. And I just can't say enough good things about the job Kelvin Sampson does.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to make a comp, and I think it works in this town in particular, in Chicago, but it feels kind of like he's college basketball Tom Thibodeau. He gets every last bit out of his players. And I mean, like, they're not a big team. Like, I mean, you mentioned with the AAC how there's 6'8", 6'9", centers. They certainly are in that group of teams with 6'8", 6'9", centers and are perennially one of the best offensive rebounding teams. And you don't understand how they just, I mean, he knows how to coach these guys. It's really fun to watch, especially in some of these big games, like when we get to Elite Eights and Final Fours and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, last year he turned Josh Carlton into, who was like a backup at UConn, into the best center in the AAC and like one of the better centers in the country. Like the year before in the Final Four team, he took Justin Gorham, who averaged 10 points and 7 rebounds at Towson, and turned him into the best offensive rebounder in college basketball. Like, I think you and I could go suit up and somehow we'd be averaging like 3 offensive rebounds a game. That's just like the way he operates.
Right. And now he's recruiting too. He's getting some of these big name recruits. I mean, you mentioned Jairus Walker earlier. He's a top 10, top 15 guy in the class, and that certainly is going to help them and I think advance the program to the next level. All right, let's get into Maui a little bit. We're already sort of underway in the Maui field. The one team to me that I'm really high on heading into this season, and they certainly have looked pretty good in the early portions of the year, but that's Creighton. And they look like one of the more talented starting lineups in all of college basketball right now. I think the addition of Baylor Shireman to go along with some of the existing pieces, Ryan Kalkbrenner, I know he had a little injury scare yesterday, but that Creighton team, they were tied up with Texas Tech, another team that's going to really make you earn it on the offensive side. But they bounced back after that, and they looked like one of the best teams in all the sport yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, it was really impressive to weather the storm against Texas Tech. That's a team that just kind of keeps coming at you in waves, and they just did such a good job. They scored 1.2 points per possession against one of the best defenses and one of the best defensive minds in college basketball. Again, unbelievably impressive. They're talented at every spot. I love the fact that they have three guys on the floor at any given time who are essentially point guards, and Nembhard, Trey Alexander, who had to play point guard behind Nembhard when he got hurt last year, and then Shireman, who was essentially a 6'7" point guard at South Dakota State. I mean, they have just multiple guys at any given time who can handle the basketball. They've got four shooters on the floor at any given time. A big man who at his best in Kalkbrenner is dominant both on both ends, defensively and putting pressure on the rim offensively. And so they've got all the pieces to be certainly the best team in the Big East and have a chance to go to their first ever Final Four. And they're that good. We'll see how they navigate some of these tests coming up here. They've got, I know after Maui, they have to go play a neutral court game against Texas, which should be really, really interesting. Obviously, Big East play won't be easy, but I think pieces-wise, you look at this group and say, yeah, that's a team that could go to an Elite Eight, go to a Final Four, maybe even push for a national championship.
How much does depth worry you? Because like the thing that I saw all over Twitter yesterday was Creighton, best starting five, best starting five, best starting five. It felt like every single college basketball talking head had that. But okay, what about after the starting five? What do you see there from Creighton?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is that most of the guys that would bring on off the bench kind of fit into their their system, right? So like Farabella was at TCU. He's a like a good spot shooter and like ball mover. Great. You can just plug him in for any of the three guards off the bench. Fred King, he's a freshman big man, but like looked the part yesterday, was big, physical, got some big rebounds when Kalkbrenner was off the floor, right? Like they're going to ride these guys. They're going to give them 28, 30 minutes a game. But I think that like, I think they have enough depth with Farabella, with Sharif Mitchell, who's a really good on-ball defender, with King, you know, and I also think that like, I wouldn't be stunned if at some point, and they need, if they need a spark, they start going to lineups with like a guy like Alexander as the sixth man. He's so good, at, you might just have to keep him on the floor more. But like, I don't think this team would be hurting if you plugged in someone like Farabella at the starting two guard spot next to Nembhard and brought a guy like Alexander off the bench. I don't think they'll have to do that, but I think if they got to a point where they just didn't feel like they were getting enough bench production, I think they could kind of switch, mess with the lineups a little bit. And so obviously injuries are a risk. If Kalkbrenner can't stay healthy, for instance, that would hugely hurt their ceiling. But I think they have enough as presently constructed to not have too many issues.
Yeah. And then you look at the matchup that they've got today. They're going up against Arkansas. I'd imagine a lot of people probably think the winner of this game ends up taking Maui, two teams that are had really high preseason expectations. But what have you seen from Arkansas in the early portions of this season that you like or maybe don't like?
Anthony Black played really, really well against Louisville, and that's really huge for them because, especially until Nick Smith gets back, who's going to be their best player, going to be a top five pick in the NBA draft, they just need guys who can make shots. And that was the one thing I thought that was notable watching them against Louisville, was that very like early on in that game, Louisville just was like, shoot the ball. Like, I dare you. Jordan Walsh, shoot the three. Anthony Black, shoot the three. And they eventually started taking and making them, but I think game plan wise, that's still absolutely the correct strategy, is that this team doesn't have a ton of shooting. They recruited probably one too many bigs and one too few shooters. So that's just, that happens when you're building a roster of like 10 new guys in the spring. But I think once Smith gets back, a lot of those issues will be smoothed over. And I think once you do have Nick Smith to go with Black, who's this like great, pass first, 6'7" guy who's unselfish, you can make plays in transition, kind of like a Kyle Anderson type, or maybe like NBA Lonzo Ball. Like obviously Lonzo in college was ball dominant, but I think watching Black, you see kind of that NBA feel where like it's take, catch and shoot threes, keep the ball moving, like attack closeouts. He's a really valuable player in that regard. So I think once you have Smith back, they're going to be super athletic at every spot. This kid Trayvon Brazil is going to produce more highlight dunks than anyone in college basketball. Like, remember that name? He's the guy who, like,
Mizzou
jumped over.
Transfer, right?
Yes, was like an 8-6 guy as a freshman at Mizzou. He was in the portal so early that I don't think people realized how good he was until after he committed. Like Arkansas, like, snapped him up really quick, and then everyone's like, "Hold on, like, I just watched the film on this guy. He's really good. Like, how did this guy get here?" But that's the master portaler, Eric Musselman.
That's the must bus. Yeah, I mean, no one has embraced that sort of mantra and that shift in college basketball quite like Eric Musselman, and you've seen it paid off for his teams and why they've gone on some of these runs. I do want to talk about the team that they beat yesterday, Louisville, who opened the season with 3 1-point losses, and then yesterday all the wheels come falling off, especially in like that final 10 minutes or so when Arkansas really started to take it to him and punched him in the mouth. So 80-54, Louisville is 0-4 for the first time since the 40s as a program. What are they saying in Kentucky right now about Kenny Payne? And I mean, I saw Jeff Goodman tweeting yesterday, Nolan Smith's the best point guard on this team right now. What's going wrong with Louisville and the Cardinals?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can split hairs on things that Kenny hasn't done great in game in the first four games, right? Like I didn't think their sense of urgency was there in the first couple games. I think they're not a team that's talented enough to play without a sense of urgency against anyone, especially after you lose one of them, right? Like if you lose to Bellarmine, that should be a wake-up call to like really, really grind against Wright State and really, really grinding against App State. I just felt like they still walked out and thought they could out-talent people, but I think the guys have played relatively hard. I think they don't look unorganized. The roster is completely off kilter. There's no balance to it. There's not enough guard play. They've one scholarship guard that like is competent. They took a kid. And this was obvious, right? Like the way they built their roster, when he took the job, you were like, wow, this team has way too many bigs and not enough guards. And Kenny basically stood pat. Like he took one big and Brandon Hunley Hatfield from Tennessee. and swung at like Tyrese Hunter and like a couple other like super huge name transfers. But after that, like at some point, you just got to fill in the spots. So at some point, you got to say, we need two guys who can dribble the basketball so that LLS can get a breather. That poor kid after 3 days in Maui is going to need an IV for a 6-hour flight home. I mean, it's unbelievable how much they're putting on him. And I think all the issues that you see with Louisville right now are issues that were created in June and July, not in October or November. And could they be better with the pieces they have? Probably. But the fact of the matter is, like, they just needed to go into the portal and get two competent guards. And they didn't have to be super high-level players. I know they had NCAA stuff looming over them, whatever. But, like, when I'm watching Boston College and Pitt and, you know, the bottom tier of the ACC with guards, then I'm saying, hey, if Louisville had this guy, they might win 7 games this year in the ACC. If Louisville had this guy, they might win 9 games in the ACC, right? Like, that's a problem. And that's on Kenny Payne. So it's going to be an uncomfortable offseason. And no DJ Wagner. That was, you know, I think from the start, kind of the saving grace sales pitch was like, hey, I'm going to get DJ. I'm going to bring us back.
Yeah. What's Milt's status right now? Is he still going to be on staff by the end of the year?
Milt is qualified for his current role, regardless of whether he brought DJ. But I mean, we know why he was hired, and that did not happen. So no DJ. Their recruiting class in the spring so far, they've got two good 2023s. Both of them are combo forwards, which the current roster is entirely combo forwards. So they got to go recruit like 4 guards who can play. And if they don't do that, it might be another ugly year and it will turn quickly. I don't think he's on the hot seat no matter what happens this year, but like, it's not going to be a comfortable spring for Mr. Payne after what I think is going to be like a 23 loss season.
Yeah, I mean, and you know that fan base, they're not going to be patient with it either. Like, if this thing doesn't turn around quickly this year, they're going to, like, I'm sure it's already started on the message boards and stuff
lucky,
like that.
He's lucky he's not an outsider, right? Yeah. Like, that's the one saving grace, is that Kenny Payne is like a known commodity to Louisville people, and, like, people want him to do well, right? If he was not the choice, if this was Chris Mack doing this, like, the pitchforks would be out at his front porch already. Like, it'd be that bad. So,
well, it may sting if they see Iona in the tournament and not Louisville this year, because I'm sure there are people there who want Rick back with this Louisville program right now. All right, I want to get to what I think every year is probably the most underrated tournament of Feast Week, and that's Battle for Atlantis. I think this is also a tournament that's a pretty good indicator of future success, because if you win this tournament, if you look through the history, a lot of these teams go on to the Final Four as the victors from the Battle for Atlantis. So the field this year, you've got Butler, BYU, Dayton, Kansas, NC State, Tennessee, USC, Wisconsin. Of that bunch, how many do you feel like are true Final Four contenders?
I think probably just Kansas and Tennessee. I thought that, I know there was a lot of like overreaction after Tennessee lost to Colorado, but Tennessee is still really, really good. They're obviously, Rick Barnes has to do it in March, but they built an unbelievable team last year. They can really, really shoot the basketball, which that's been a concern with them year over year. They have great shooting, I think, of this group. The point guard play with Zakai Ziegler, I think, is going to be up and down, but I love that kid, man. Like, he's so tough and plays so hard. Like, he reminds me of Chris Chioza when Chioza was at Florida, just like that, like, energizer bunny point guard, and just really contributes. Like, I think that Dayton's a tournament team. I think Wisconsin's a chance to be a tournament team. I saw them a couple weeks ago in Milwaukee and thought they really battled. Butler, I think, is much improved. I think we'll be in that NCAA tournament picture as well. And then we'll see what happens with, like, this is going to be a huge weekend for NC State. I know it's not a weekend, but it feels like a weekend anyway. NC State, like, has passed the test early on. This is a huge year for Kevin Keats, a hot seat year. They have Turquavion Smith, who's super talented in the backcourt. Like, they open with Kansas, and then they play either NC State or Wisconsin or Dayton, excuse me. How they navigate this week will tell me a lot about where NC State is and where things are heading for Kevin Keats.
Yeah, what do you make of Butler and the Butler Buckeyes? I mean, it's Thad Matta, and then you got a staff with John Diebler, Greg Oden. I've seen Evan Turner hovering around the program a little bit too. What do you make of the Butler Buckeyes?
I've been impressed. Like, I thought it. I just felt like the talent level under LaVal Jordan was lacking. I jokingly said this to a couple of people, like, during last year, where it's like, Butler looks like they'd be a really good team if their jersey said George Washington, right? Like this team is all like good Atlantic 10 players, and that's not going to cut it in the Big East. And I just think like he did a nice, like Thad has done a nice job of getting in enough, like not, you're never going to turn it over at Butler the way you would do it at other places. Like you're not going to flip the whole roster over. Like he said, okay, like what do we have that's useful? And Chuck Harris is good. Seamus Lukosius is good. And then let's implement a couple transfers who fit us. Eric Hunter, veteran, defends, athletic, can like make plays. And then Manny Bates really defends, can really block shots, really changes what they look like defensively. And Bates has been awesome. Lukosius has been much improved. I think they have the pieces to be very, very good. I question kind of the, I'm not sure about Butler's like program upside right now, because I don't think it's like a place that's going to ever recruit at a super high level at this point. And I think in the Big East, a lot of people are, but that's a ball coach. And like that is going to win games and find a way to get this thing rolling again to the point where they're a perennial NCAA tournament team. I have very little doubt about that. And I think they're trending to be towards that this year. We'll see. This week, obviously, will be a huge test for them, but I think they will come away impressing a lot of people with where they are right now.
So I do want to recap one of the events that happened over the weekend. That's the main event. And even though it's not like a quote unquote feast week, it's kind of like the appetizer into feast week. It's maybe the rolls, not the turkey, but it's the rolls that get you going for the meal. But I mean, you talk about some of the best teams in the country. You talk about top 10 teams, teams that really boosted their resume. And I think you saw one team that ends up winning that event. They're probably one of the biggest early risers this year, and that's Virginia. I think people thought Virginia, especially in an ACC that's sort of in turbulence right now, could make some hay in the ACC, but I don't think people maybe thought that Virginia could be a top five team, which is where they're sitting at right now. What's impressed you the most with Tony Bennett and the Cavaliers?
Yeah, I think they're going to come down from five. Right? I don't think that they're going to stick there that all year, but like they're shooting it much better than they did last season, and they're just like athletically much more where they need to be than they've been the last couple of years. I think people don't think of the teams that Tony Bennett had that won big as being very athletic, but like just because Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome were white dudes doesn't mean that team had no athletes, right? Like DeAndre Hunter is like was a really good athlete. That team had NBA players. Mm-hmm. Obviously like dating before that, like Malcolm Brogdon, London Perentes, mm-hmm. Justin Anderson, like guys like that built that program. Like they had dudes who were athletic enough to not look overmatched, and I just think at times they've looked like that the last couple of years. They're shooting it much better than they're going to, right? Like Kihei Clark is not going to shoot 47% from three. Reese Beekman's not going to shoot 50%. Armon Franklin went berserk against Baylor in the second half. He's not going to do that every time out. Like every single guy in their rotation right now is shooting like 40 plus from three, yeah. And again, that's not going to stick. But I think they're better offensively. Year two under Tony with a lot of these guys in their rotation, particularly Gardner and Franklin, I think is huge for them defensively. I thought last year they took a step back on that end, and a lot of it's just like that pack line is very hard to learn. It's not something that you can like I just think these guys look a lot more comfortable and well schooled in it right now than they did in the past. And so I just feel like they have enough shooting. They're going to defend. They've got a great coach, and they're athletic enough that they have a chance to contend for an ACC championship. How high can they go? Can they be a national championship level team? We'll see. But that weekend felt like a regional final in terms of level of talent and play, and the fact they were able to win it is very impressive.
Yeah, so one of the teams that they took down in that championship of the main event was Illinois. And Illinois looked really impressive to open up the campaign, too. I mean, took care of business against some bye games, bye opponents, Eastern, UMKC, Monmouth, crushed them by 30, 40 points apiece. And then you get into the main event. You beat UCLA in comeback fashion. Terrence Shannon goes off in that game. I think there's a lot for this Illinois team. I know, like, some Illinois fans maybe were worried about what the post-Io and Kofi years would look like, but this looks like a team that they've got some dudes and they've got some talent. And I mean, Terrence Shannon, you kind of talked about it with Virginia's guys. They're not going to shoot around 50% from three all year, but I mean, Terrence Shannon, he can have his nights. And we saw him at Texas Tech have some of those nights, and he certainly had one against UCLA.
I mean, he was unbelievable. And again, He's a streaky shooter. That's something they're going to have to deal with. And I thought you saw that against Virginia, where when they needed buckets in the half court down the stretch, Virginia did a good job of forcing the game into that type of a half court game. The things were just disjointed, and they just didn't seem to have a lot of answers to how to get consistent good looks offensively. But I love this Illinois team, man. They're so fun to watch. They've got just incredible buy-in, I think, on their roster into the new system that Brad has embraced with, you know, kind of pressing and running and being long and athletic and spacing the floor. Like they just look so bought into that vision. And I think Brad did a great job of recruiting four freshmen who can all contribute right away. And obviously two of them were super highly regarded in Ty Rogers and Sky Clark, but Jaden Epps and Sincere Harris weren't top 50 recruits. And those guys are huge contributors already. Epps was maybe the best player against Virginia. He was really, really good. And so I think they kind of have to exist in chaos. Like they had like the UCLA game, like early in the second half, you were just kind of watching like, is this basketball? Like what sport am I watching right now? They're just like, everyone's just kind of running at each other. Like the ball's like going out of bounds every 3 seconds. Like, I don't really know what's happening. But I think that's kind of the way they're going to have to play, because I thought that when Virginia was able to slow them down and force them to just like play a straight end of game sequence, Virginia was just much more prepared to execute. And Illinois will get there, but I just think, I think they have Big Ten championship upside, but it's going to be like heart rate rising to watch Illinois all season. Like, yeah. I'm a neutral observer. I'm sitting there like, this game is like stressing me out to watch them.
Like they could get to the Big Ten championship and win by 20 and also lose by 20. Like they feel like that sort of team this year.
Yeah, they're going to gamble a bunch, but I mean, I love Shannon. I love Coleman Hawkins. He's really come along. Dane is like a microwave scorer of a big man, which is kind of a weird thing. Like you think of like a guard you bring in who'd like go out and like take a bunch of shots. He's basically that. You just bring him in, like hope he's got the touch and roll on. It's great.
He's going to be like in terms of like a fan favorite standpoint, he's going to be like Georgie was for that Illinois program. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to watch and monitor this year. Real quickly, a couple of other things I want to get to with you. This week, again, we've hit on some of the big events. What are some of like the other events going on? Like, what are we going to see the Sickos committee be tweeting about this week for college basketball in terms of Feast Week? What kind of tournaments are we looking at there?
Man, that's a good question. I mean, yesterday, like Bryant and Detroit Mercy made 24 of 35 threes in the first half. And that was like ridiculous. That was like a flow sports game where you're not sure if it actually exists or not.
Right.
There's a bunch like that. Like there's a tournament in Southern California called the SoCal Challenge. And I was watching at the end of last night, it was Minnesota versus Cal Baptist. And like at like one in the morning, UNLV versus Southern Illinois. And it's in this like little high school gym in like Southern California that just feels like they're trying to be the Maui Invitational, but in Southern California, like every single bit. I was like, this is like the Walmart brand Maui Invitational here. What exactly is going on? So I think anytime we've got like really early in the day basketball that's on like a sketchy streaming service or super late night games like that one, I think that's the good stuff. Like you've been watching basketball all day. You've been watching these like high level games. And all of a sudden it's like, all right, it's 1 a.m. I can watch Southern Illinois versus Cal Baptist. Right. What do you think?
Yeah.
Like, all right, let's get
that's like game. You wake up in like a half daze and it's like the George Lopez of college basketball is on all of a sudden. Before I let you go here, I do need to ask you, all right? I can't bring you on here and not ask you about Northwestern. A lot of people are up in arms about what's going to happen with Chris Collins right now, but I'll just let you go here. Northwestern, your thoughts?
I mean, my thoughts are that, like, I've been really frustrated the last few years. It's like not unknown to people if they follow me on Twitter. I think this job is a place you can win. I think Chris Collins is underwhelmed relative to the talent that they've had in their roster regularly. I think he's made strategic gaffes in how he builds his roster, including this year with the fact that he left three scholarships open coming into the year. But I also think credit where credit's due. Like, they've developed guys up front that have made them more competitive this year. They've passed their early tests. None of them particularly challenging, but they passed all of them. This week will be informative. They play a very good Liberty team, and then potentially Auburn after that, or Bradley, who is also pretty tough and well coached. I think watching them early on, I don't necessarily see the one thing that they do well enough to win them games in the Big Ten consistently. But they've got experienced guards in Boo Booey, who I think has continued to make strides and looks like an all-Big Ten level point guard. And, you know, I think this league is not so overwhelming that they couldn't turn it and be competitive. I just, for me, I would be surprised if they're outside that bottom four in the league. And if they're not there, I think I'd be very surprised if Chris Collins is back next year. So we'll see what happens. It's a big year for him, obviously. I think Boo's got to win him some games. And again, this week will be the start of it, because once they get into some of these bigger tests and ACC Big Ten Challenge and et cetera, it's going to be a much different grind than playing against Northern Illinois and Fort Wayne.
I mean, it's interesting too, because you bring up the development stuff, like Pete Nance, a guy who's on your roster, he's on North Carolina right now. Ryan Young, guy who's on your roster last year, he's at Duke, albeit I don't know if he belongs on that Duke roster. But even the year before, Miller Kopp, he's at Indiana now. Like they developed some dudes, but now they're just playing in different spots.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, though, like I don't fault Chris for losing any of those guys. I mean, Miller after year three was frustrating, but like the other two guys graduated, they moved on. Like that is what it is. I just think like the fact that like you weren't able to capitalize more on that team. Like last year's team was good enough to be in the mix, right? Maybe not go to the NCAA tournament, but like be competitive for it.
Well,
really.
Don't tell Rothstein that.
I was at the happy hour.
Where you at the happy hour?
Oh yeah, I had to. It was sticking for the brand. But yeah, they had more than a 7-win Big Ten team did last year, and it left a little meat on the bone. And I think if the season goes poorly, and if there's a change made, like you will look back if you're Chris Collins and say that was the season, that was the opportunity. We had two veteran bigs, we had an experienced point guard, we had young talent. Like that was the team to go do it, and they just didn't get it done.
Awesome. Well, Kevin, appreciate you for hopping on here. You can check his work out on SI.com. Also, you can find him with the Field of 68, and you can follow him on Twitter at @CBB_Central. Appreciate you hopping on, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks, man.
Great stuff from Kevin. We will be back with you later on this week, getting you set for the college basketball weekend. Brian Hanley and I will recap our picks from last week and get you some fresh ones for the upcoming weekend of college basketball. Happy Thanksgiving to all. Happy Feast Week. And we'll talk to you guys later.